The Defense Department's program to let employees use smartphones on the secret network is becoming rather popular. After moving from the pilot stage to its full production stage in June, the Defense Mobile Classified Capability Secret is in demand not just in the military, but across the government. Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller joins me now with details on why this program is so popular. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
I mean, it seems only logical for people to be able to use mobile devices on that final frontier. So tell us how this whole program works, Defense Mobile Classified Capability hyphen secret.
Exactly. There's always an acronym, DMCCS. Got to know the acronyms if you're going to talk about DOD. And basically, it lets users very simply access voice and data on the secret level from anywhere in the world. Now, the Defense Information Systems Agency piloted about 2,000 of these devices, mostly a hardened version of the Samsung Galaxy S4 over the last few years. And in June, it moved to the full from test stage to production stage, and it just has taken off. I mean, people really see the value in it. Tom, if you remember, this capability, this hardened Samsung Galaxy S4, really, it replaced the old SMEPED device. If you remember SMEPED, that was a great acronym that probably came out in the mid-2000s, Secure Mobile Environment Portable Electronic Device.
Yeah, that was, used on the Apple Newton, wasn't it, or something like that?
Apple Newton. Laserdisc.
Laserdisc.
And I think, you know, the thing about the SMEPED was while it worked, it was old, it was bulky, it was only running on 2G networks. Obviously, the Samsung Galaxy S4 runs on the 4G networks. And DISA said, we got to have something better. We got to have something that's modern. We got to move toward commercial technology because building our own was just too expensive, too much to upkeep. So they ended up going with this version of Samsung, which runs the Android operating system, and they actually turned off the SMEPED as of July 30th. And that's the big difference here, commercial device versus government-built device. And I think that's key here because then once they get one done, others can kind of follow suit. And I'm not saying Apple will ever get there because of other reasons, but other devices could be available for DoD going down the road.
And so this is coming from the Defense Information Systems Agency, as you mentioned. Do we know what technologies they're using or how they were able to accomplish this on this device and using the public networks?
So two things are happening. One is they took that Samsung device and hardened it. How they hardened it, they don't tell too much about it because obviously that's some sensitivities around cybersecurity. The second thing they did was they actually rolled out what they call the first mobile device management capability on the secret network. So, of course, any MDM system, they all work very similar, you know, in terms of protecting the data, protecting the device, and, you know, putting the data that's maybe secret in a bucket that's secure versus the non-secure data. They turn off things like Bluetooth. They turn off things, anything that could create a cybersecurity risk. And that's what's important here is that the fact is people are using it, people do trust it, and the pilots have worked out. And Kim Rice is the DISA's mobility portfolio manager. She spoke yesterday at a conference on federal mobile computing, and she says about 750 users today are using this secret device, and more coming online every day, every week, and the appetite for it just is growing. Let me just offer you one comparison. On the unclassified side, she offered a few details of that. There's already 80,000 users of BlackBerry, 25,000 users of Apple and Android devices. They're looking at bringing on Microsoft Windows and Apple MacBooks as well. So you can see that the unclassified side is huge. And therefore, I think that's part of the reason why there's this need for this classified side or the secret side, because so many people already have devices. And I'm sure that even if, you know, you say, well, 20% or 25% of those 105,000 people who already have smartphones need access to secret, that's a huge market.
And so it sounds like they spent some time developing this capability, and now that they have it on one device, it seems like they can rapidly scale it to all sorts of devices for large numbers of people.
Well, I think that's the goal in the long term. I think, you know, each device is going to have to go through the testing and the review process to ensure that they can run secret networks, you know, and follow it along. Because I think one of the keys here is that Samsung worked very closely with the Defense Department to on this specific device. Now, I understand Samsung's already released the Galaxy S6, so the question, I guess, usually becomes, well, what about the next generation? And I think what you'll find is DoD will always be behind, and I think the government, generally speaking, will always be behind because of that review process, of that feeling out process, make sure, yes, this does work for us.
All right. So you mentioned earlier that some other agencies outside of the Defense Department are looking at this capability. What's going on there?
What's interesting is, as Kim Rice talks about, how once they rolled this out to DOD, other agencies said, hey, could we try that out? Could we test it? And in fact, Secretary of State John Kerry was part of that pilot group, that 2000 pilot group, and he actually took the phone overseas to test it out, and state liked it so much, they actually put in an order to buy some of these hardened S4 devices for their employees. And Rice also says that not just state, but about 10 other agencies, maybe up to 15, are interested in this technology. I can imagine, you know, the Justice Department, Homeland Security, Treasury, just to name a few, are really prime candidates to use this secret device. And the other piece of this is, it's not just civilian agencies, but Rice says coalition forces, you know, coalition partners are also interested. So anywhere, you know, Australia, Great Britain, you know, South Korea, Japan, who knows? I mean, all these people who've come together, you know, for the different global war on terror, they need to communicate too in a secret level. And these devices also are part of that effort.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. Now, one of the big challenges for agencies is making sure that their mobile apps are secure, not just the device. And, what you've discovered, I understand, is that the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency has a program for securing apps. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, this is actually a really interesting program for many ways, because the deal with mobile app vetting is there's a security concern, there's a cost concern, there's so many pieces that just haven't been quite worked out from on a large scale level, that NGA came up with this idea of an app broker. And this, I think, in many ways could be a real difference maker. When I was at the conference yesterday, the woman from NGA, Shanna Simmons, talked about this, and several agencies came up and said, I want to talk to you more about this. And basically what NGA wants to do is create a one app store for all geospatial apps. And then they hired a broker, in this case Ngility, back in December, to do four things. They're going to market this app store and NGA to other developers who really could use this data. They're going to oversee, if you will, the contracting process. And let me be clear here, they're not contracting per se on behalf of the government, but they're going to work with the developers to make sure the developers are meeting the needs of NGA, but also do it in a way that they can get those apps on board very quickly, come up with a process to vet those apps. Now, she says that the goal is right now, you know, it could take, you know, a year and a half to get contract actions done. She says the goal for NGA is 90 days from the time they identify a need to that app is ready to go on the app store, 90 days. So that's a huge, huge difference comparably to what we've seen, you know, in other places. And what's also about this is NGA doesn't pay for the apps up front. The only time the developer gets paid is when that app is downloaded. And let's be clear here, this is not like the Apple Store, Tom, where you go and they have your credit card information, and every time you download music or another Angry Birds game, you don't pay 99 cents. The user, in this case, anyone in the intelligence community, anyone in DOD, just downloads the app and NGA pays the developer. So it's not like every time you got to come up with your own credit card.
It does make you wonder what kinds of apps they're talking about, because all the phones have mapping apps. So I wonder, it makes you wonder what NGA has for its own apps.
So one of the things she mentioned, and that's one of the questions I asked her, because I moderated this panel yesterday and said, well, what's your favorite app? And she kind of looked at me for a second and said, well, the most popular app is the one that's an aeronautical app that lets pilots plan their routes on, let's say, an iPad or another tablet. And she says that just stopped them from having to bring 70 pounds of maps when they go on a plane. And I said, oh, that's something that's very similar. We've heard about the Air Force. And she goes, yes, they're probably using this very similar app. So it's stuff like that, you know, you could not necessarily do with a Google Map or a Waze to plan your flight pattern. And currently, she says six other apps are under development for this specific program, and they're going to come through the App Store eventually. But the App Store also has dozens of more that have been developed over the years, whether it's by NGA or other people in government. So the idea of a broker, I think, is what's key here, is having that in-between person. We've talked a lot, Tom, about the cloud broker over the last few years, but I think the mobile app broker may actually be a better opportunity to have that middle man, if you will, versus the cloud. And so it's something I think we should watch.
All right. And then finally, the CIO Council is having a big role in mobile app vetting also. And what will we expect from them in the few months coming ahead?
So if you remember a couple of months back now, they approved something called the NIAP standard. This is a National Information Assurance Partnership framework for vetting mobile apps, something that DoD was using. The CIO Council said, okay, we're going to accept this for the civilian agencies as well. Well, now this mobile tiger team that really worked on this is moving on from the, okay, we have the framework, now how do we make it operational? And Rob Palmer, who is the tiger team lead, says, the way to make this operational is just to make sure apps or app developers are answering a few standard questions that relate back to this framework. Like, for instance, how do you use the app? How do you integrate it into the network? The goal is to get those developers to answer simple questions up front, including security up front, and then use those tools under the NIAP to implement these mobile apps or to develop these mobile apps. So it's moving kind of, it's a communication piece, but it's also coming up with an implementation plan for the framework. It's not just, okay, here's a framework, use it, but how to use it and how to make sure it gets used during app development. I think that's key because, again, there's so many questions that come up about security of specific apps. And I think having this operational plan from the CIO Council is going to help all agencies.
I think one of the biggest challenges or maybe dilemmas the government faces with mobile apps is the location services that so many of them depend on. Knowing where the device is or where the person using the app is. And of course, you can think of a thousand reasons how that helps you in your everyday life using a mobile device. But if you're the FBI or you're the CIA or you're any of a large number of agencies, you really want the device to be able to broadcast where you are. And it's not such a simple yes or no answer because maybe there's a headquarters that wants to know where all of the agents are at a given time using location services, but that means anybody can find that out. So if you turn it off, you lose a lot of capability and perhaps safety and capability. But yet if you turn it on, you give up some security. So maybe that's the kind of thing they're going to try to figure out.
Right, and I think that the other piece of it is they don't want to open their network up to an app that has malware, that has problems. So I think there's a lot to think about, and I think that's why so much is going into this idea, okay, how do we vet apps the right way? How do we make sure the devices are secure? The data is secure when you talk about data at rest and data in transit. So there's so much to think about. People think, oh, we'll just use it. We all have iPhones. We all have smartphones. We all have a Droid device. Just use it. And the pieces, there's so many other pieces, as you talked about, within government that they have to think about that I think that the average person doesn't consider or doesn't realize.
There's also the app pedigree, that is to say who developed it and where they developed it, and half the stuff on this or that public app store are developed in China. Many, many, many apps are developed in China and in Russia, and so that doesn't say they're good or bad, but for the governmental purposes or national security purposes, it certainly would raise a question.
I think you're absolutely right, and that's why I think agencies have been hesitant to a certain extent to really jump into this idea of mobile app development and app store. I think some agencies have done more than others, but I think one of the big issues is for these national security agencies, whether it's DoD or the intelligence agencies or just someone like DHS, they have those bit broader concerns. And I think going back to the beginning of our conversation, Tom, I think that's why this idea of a secret network phone is so getting so much popularity, because they see the potential, they see the benefits, and both from a communication standpoint, but also maybe more importantly from a app development standpoint. So I think we've been talking about mobility for a long time now, but I think maybe it's starting to kind of gain a little bit of the momentum people had hoped for over the last few years.
All right, the latter-day cone of silence. Jason Miller is the executive editor here at Federal News Radio. As always, thanks so much for that update.
My pleasure, Tom.